Welcome to the Distance to Empty podcast, the podcast where we dive into 200 plus mile ultramarathons, multi-day events and efforts. I'm your host, Kevin Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Peter Noyes. Peter, welcome back from vacation. How are you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, that was a really fun vacation. My kid's best friend moved to North Carolina, so we flew out there to visit and explored a couple states in the South, so never really been in that part of the country before, but enjoyed running in a bunch of those cities.
Was it humid?
No, this was actually a great time to go. It was not bad. Weather was perfect.
Nice. Yeah, I guess this time of year is not too bad, but I'm familiar. Being from the East Coast, I'm familiar with those states that you were in, North and South Carolina and Georgia. And yeah, you don't want to be running there in the middle of the summer.
I don't think so. And what about you? Is this your first big week of the 100 mile weeks?
At the time this episode's released, I'll have just wrapped up my second 100 plus mile week in a row. So I am definitely feeling it, tired, but I'm, you know, really enjoying the work and it feels good. And feeling pretty confident going into Cocodona this year. Yeah, putting in more work than ever.
Great.
So today's episode is a big focus of today's episode is on women in ultra running. And I wanted to chat about something before we introduce our guest. Sort of on that topic. So my wife, Melanie White, is training for her first 200 right now. It'll be in June at the Tahoe 200. In the process of training for that race and completing it, she is raising money for Free to Run. So for those of you who don't know, Free to Run's mission is sort of to advance gender equity through globally through running. They do this by providing leadership and well-being programs for girls and young women in conflict areas around the world. So it's a really good cause, started by ultra runner and human rights lawyer Stephanie Case, who has run Tour de France a bunch of times and Tour de Glaciers. I think she won Tour de Glaciers. So a couple of 200 plus multi-day events there. So kind of still relates to our podcast here. But if you want to check it out, I will post the link to Melanie's Free to Run fundraiser in the show notes. And if every listener donated $1 or $5, she'd probably meet her goal by the end of the week that this episode airs. So check it out. Really good cause, and would really appreciate anyone who gives it a look. So thank you. And then, yeah, our guest today founded a group all about women in ultra running. So really excited to dive into that. And without further ado, let's introduce Rachel Bambrick. Rachel, welcome to Distance to Empty. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. Can you just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and explain how you came to this crazy world of ultra running and the even crazier world of taking it to 200 and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Rachel Bambrick. I am an ultra runner living in Philadelphia. I like to say I'm an occupational therapist by trade. That's what I went to school for. But since then, now I'm still an OT, but also a running coach, an ultra running coach. And yeah, I came to this crazy world of ultras. The first ultra I ever did, it was part of a larger series called the Run Across Haiti. So it's a 7-day staged ultra point to point, coast to coast through the country of Haiti. So that was really my first exposure to the world of ultra. So embedded within, it's about 200 miles over the course of 7 days with stops and goes to make it staged. But throughout that, you end up running a few different ultras. One day is about 32 miles, another day is about 52 miles. So that was my first exposure to this crazy world. So I did that in 2019 and then had plans to go back in 2020, but I think we all know what happened to 2020 and still haven't unfortunately been able to go back. But since that kind of shift of not maybe doing the Run Across Haiti anymore happened, I then was like, all right, well, what can I do here stateside? What else exists? So that's when I took on some more, I guess, quote unquote, traditional ultras. And then the world of 200s really started because I saw a Darren Race video for Cocodona that first year in 2021 and was just awestruck and could not get it out of my head, and pestered my coach until I finally got the go ahead and decided to take that on in 2023.
Awesome. So how did it go for you in 2023?
I mean, it was incredible. It was my only goal to was to finish it. I'd never done a 200 before. I just wanted to get out there and see what I could do. So I finished the race. I accomplished that goal. And I could talk about it for forever to anyone who wants to listen. And I know you both know, but what happens to your mind and your body and just like the things, the way you think about the world differently after running a 200, I think is so special and so magical. And I'm so excited to get to do it again this year.
Yeah, I think that's what really like blows my mind is how much the perspective shift is different from a 200 to a 100. When I did my first 100, I feel like I was told that it would be like this life-changing experience. And it was a wonderful experience and a really epic experience, but I don't know that I'd consider it life-changing. And then when you get to the 200s, it is like you leave a little part of yourself out there each time. And it is life-changing or life-altering at least. And until you've experienced it, I don't know that you can like fully, you know, convey that to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I felt the same sort of thing. I just, the way it changes how you look at the world. I remember the first day I went back to work after Cocodona and it's just like, oh, this is it. Like there's a whole other world out there. Does everyone here know about that?
So, you know, with Cocodona being somewhat fresh, you know, your first official 200 plus mile race last year, if this question was asked to me, I would be like, all right, well, do you have all day? But if you had to pick some of your most memorable moments and maybe your biggest like challenges during the race, and sometimes those are the same thing, but like, what are the standout moments for you from that race?
Yeah, I think I can start with challenging areas. I think something, and it's something I'm hoping to improve upon in future 200s, the sleep aspect and sleep deprivation. I knew this about myself going into it. I don't handle a lack of sleep very well. I'm a huge napper in my day-to-day life. Like I really value sleep. So I was worried about what was going to happen. And I had a sleep plan. I tried my best to stick to it, but being a more middle back of a pack finisher as I was, I was out there for 4 days and trying to manage sleeping on a few hours. That last night really caught up with me and I've never felt so crazy, like falling asleep in and out of dreams while trying to walk. We were through this section with a bunch of downed trees, just like completely covering the trail. And I was with my pacer, who's about my height, and I'm about 5'1". So the two of us are trying to figure out, do we climb the tree? Do we go under the tree? And if we climbed it, I would sit down on it and I would just fall asleep because I would sit and I would just sleep. And navigating that, I was with my pacer, Ashley, and I will forever be in debt to her and thank her for just getting me through the woods at that section alive. But that's something I would definitely like to work on. It was definitely a challenge for myself. I think another one that ended up being a challenge that sort of worked its way into a positive moment. I imagine it's been talked about, or if it hasn't, the descent down from Mingus into, I believe it's Jerome. I prepared myself so well, I felt like, for the climbs, because I live in Philadelphia, not a lot of climbs here. So I really worked hard to find any mountainous area or hill that I could practice climbing, but I hadn't focused so much on what a steep technical descent would do and feel like at that point in the race. So over 100 miles in that section, it truly just wrecked me. I fully sobbed. I was really questioning what I was going to be able to do. It just, you're on these really loose rocks coming down that steep descent. And I just thought there was no way I could keep going any further past that. So I came into the aid station. I felt really terrible, but I sort of had a really awesome shifting moment where I had to consider what the rest of my race was going to look like. Was I going to continue to sob? Was I going to continue to trudge down a mountain? Or was I going to figure something out? And I am overall, I think, a pretty positive runner. It's just kind of in my nature. But I got in my head and I kind of said, all right, we need to freaking go. So I left that aid station and I think that's around like mile 125 or so. I was doing 10-minute miles for the entire next section to the aid station. And all of the pain in my feet, all of the pain in my legs, all of the frustration, it was like it just disappeared, which I think was a huge mental shift for me later in the race when I had some other low moments, just to realize that even when it feels like all things are lost and even when it feels like there's absolutely no way you can take one more step, you absolutely can. There's these moments where you are so surprised at what your body is still able to do. So that was a really low moment that I think turned into a really memorable one that helped me and is still helping me through any other ultras. When I have those low moments, I often think back to that and how I really thought there was no way that could happen, but it did.
That descent from Mingus, I think we've talked about it now like four or five times on different episodes. It's yeah, I think we all agree with you that's a tough spot. Yeah, I guess building off of that, so you've kind of, you know, figured out how to shift perspective mid race to overcome challenges. Is that something that you've kind of now learned from, and how are you going to use that when you toe the line the next time? Are you going to be more intentional about how you're going to approach those lows?
Yeah, I think it's something that you really can't figure out about yourself. I think, like we were discussing earlier, until you have those moments happen, until you see what you're truly capable of. And I did a 24-hour race in August, and it really just felt like after Coco Donna, I'd opened like another door into what I was able to do in ultras. I was able to stay a lot more even keeled during that race when I had a low moment or when some nutrition wasn't working correctly. Whereas in the past, I might've tended to inch toward panic mode or getting stressed out or frustrated. If I started to feel that step towards that, I would pull myself back, recall moments from Coco Donna, recall other things that I'd seen myself do and ways that I'd pulled myself out of low moments. And I felt like I was a lot more able to handle that in that race. And I'm very hopeful with future races and with future 200s, I'm still able to call upon that. You know, I can't do it perfectly. I'm sure I'll still have sobbing moments on the side of the trail or intense frustrations. That's just the nature of doing something like this. But I think overall, having that memory and all the other memories from Coco Donna are really invaluable when I'm going into future 200s.
One of our goals here, subplot goals at the podcast, is to normalize crying in ultra running at 200s. I think now I know all three of us have cried at Coco Donna, and I think every guest we've spoken to who's run Coco Donna cried at least once. So good company. And I really love that, like, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but like if you can pull on any of that strength that you found at Coco Donna in other races, like it's a huge win. I had some of the lowest lows of my life at my last 200 in September at Tour de Jeanse, and I'm like really hoping it's going to strengthen my Coco Donna this upcoming year in 2024, and like willing myself to be able to pull on like those low moments and those like newfound strengths that I know I can do what I'm setting out to do. So it remains to be seen, but I'm looking forward to like working through that experience. So, you know, Coco Donna 250 2024 is coming up in like 6 weeks, which is mind blowing to someone who is registered. what would you say to, all the other first time Coco Donos, Coco Locos out there who are getting ready to toe the line for this year?
Yeah, I when I read this question just in prep and was thinking through what would my biggest piece of advice be, I think what I landed on was that just find those moments of lightness throughout the race. Find those moments that can make you smile. Find those moments of joy, because like we just talked about, there are going to be some incredible lows that happen. That's pretty much inevitable. But the more that you can find these positive moments throughout such a daunting feat, I think the better off you're going to be. So I personally like to wear a little bit of glitter when I run. It makes me feel happy. And I've noticed aid station volunteers, other runners, they notice it. And then we have a conversation about it. And that's a moment of positivity that I can find. Something as simple as thanking the volunteers when you leave an aid station. Often if you give that back, they'll give it right back to you. And you just feel that moment of connectivity, finding other folks, maybe having a low moment along the trail. And if you're in a good space, grabbing them, saying, come on, let's do this together, and finding that camaraderie and those moments of joy. So my biggest piece of advice would be to look for that as much as you can, knowing that lows will happen, but try to find those moments of joy and lightness and positivity, because I really think they're out there, even though this may seem like such a big, scary, daunting thing.
I love that. One thing I do for myself that I learned long ago in races is one way to shift the mental perspective is remember that there was a version of you that was waking up at 5 a.m. to run every day that made a lot of sacrifices to even be able to toe the line. So if you're having a pity party mid-race for yourself, you know, you can reframe it and just be like, you want to show respect to the version of you that got you here, right? And try to twist it to be, this should be a celebration of all that training and positive. So that's one thing I do. So with your approach to 200s, I guess Cocodona last year and coming in this year, how much has community and your support structure been a part of, you know, how you got up to speed on being prepared for 200s and how you planned for it?
Yeah, to me, with running communities, you know, it might sound, I don't know. No, I think I can say this confidently. To me, community with running has been everything. It's why I even started running at all in the first place. I wasn't a runner in high school or college or anything to that nature. I moved to Philadelphia, a big city, didn't really know many people. And it was a way for me to meet different folks in part of this community. When the city felt so big, the running community, while big here, was a little bit of a smaller piece. And I was able to forge some really invaluable friendships and make some connections. So community is always on the forefront of why I really do any running or what got me into this in the first place. And I think seeing the community of 200 plus milers is one of the most beautiful things. Finding my crew and have it, and they're hopefully going to be my exact same crew for Divide coming up this year. Two people, one of them was someone that I met and I shared a loop with her, just one loop at Javelina. And she came with her fiance at the time, and they were both part of my crew for 5 days, despite I've never met her fiance before. I'd met her for a few hours. And now I have this like lifelong friendship with the two of them. Being able to pull upon like other, community members who had done other 200s has also been a huge resource. I think that's something really special about the ultra running world in general, is that there isn't quite so much like gatekeeping that you sort of see in shorter, more traditional like road races, where maybe you don't want to let a secret out because it'll make you more, give someone else a competitive edge. I don't find that that happens at all in the ultra community. People are so willing to share their wealth of knowledge to help others succeed, because I think we've all had that happen to us. So then we're more willing to pay that back. And this year, it's been something I've really enjoyed doing. I'm in the Cocodona Facebook group. And if people have questions that I know something about, I'll provide answers. I've sent videos on how I packed my pack to someone because they were asking, like, I love being able to give that back because the community gave so much to me. People were sending pace spreadsheets to me last year. I was looking through their different course descriptions and reading all of their different race reports. All of that is super helpful. And I feel like it's a really special part of this ultra world that there's really no secrets. We're, for the vast, vast majority, we're all out here to accomplish something ourselves, but also help someone else along the way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that and the role of community in ultra running in general, and especially in the 200 space. And, you know, I personally find that the bigger and more connected my own personal community gets, the better a runner I become and the stronger a runner I become. And I think, you know, kind of a buzzword that gets tossed around very frequently in ultra running is mental toughness. And, you know, the role of mental toughness in these long multi-day events is undoubtedly super important. So curious how you define mental toughness for yourself, for your athletes, what its role is in, you know, these multi-day events, and how you pull that out of the ultra running community for yourself.
Yeah, I think I look at mental toughness in a couple different ways. I don't always think of it as like how, I don't always think of it as what like traditional toughness might look like, because that's just never been something that I personally like identify with. I feel like I think of myself as more of like a lighthearted, softer, you know, sparkly, what have you kind of person, who is simultaneously able to do really tough and hard things. I think often it's toughness is really dark and gritty and traditionally masculine, let's say. And I've never resonated with that, but I've also always felt like I am tough. So that sort of toughness kind of balance or paradox has always been something I'm trying to figure out for myself. And something I'd landed upon was that I like to find my strength through softness. So I like to find my strength through moments of joy. I like to find my strength through positivity or brightness on a trail, and being able to capitalize on that and use that to help myself be more powerful and help myself be strong. Because I don't think if I just went out to a trail and tried to grit it out and just be in like an anger, bad headspace or just power through, I wouldn't do it. That's not what motivates me. And that's not what keeps me going. So I think, again, my version or view of what gives strength is strength and mental toughness is how you're able to keep yourself motivated, stay positive, and find those light moments. I also think it's a lot about problem solving. I think that's a big piece that I talk to some of the athletes that I coach, and something that I've even throughout my day-to-day job as an occupational therapist, so much of what we do and what I've always done and what I went to school for was how do you problem solve in the moment? How do you take something that may be going quote unquote wrong or not the way you expected? And how do you transform that into something that you can use? How do you take these low moments and figure out how to work around them? So it could be something I was helping someone, her water was frozen. She put ice in there and it became a frozen brick. So we were trying different methods of how we could break up the ice. We were trying different methods of, could we put the ice closer to her back so it warmed up faster and started to melt? And I think that's toughness to me as well. It's problem solving, thinking on your feet, not letting those moments bog you down and being able to continue. So I think it's two parts, finding strength and softness and finding your lightness. And then also being a good problem solver and a person who can think on their feet. Both of those things to me kind of embody mental toughness.
So basically just like David Goggins.
Yeah, I think I have the personification of David Goggins. Yeah,
that's all I heard. I mean, I am so much closer to your version of mental toughness than I am like the Goggins mentality. And I think it's even more important to employ those tactics the longer you go, and the more time you're spending with yourself and the more energy expenditure there is out there. Like, I think you were getting further away from the Goggins being effective versus, you know, what you're saying being more effective. So certainly relate to that and think that was a really, really cool answer. How frequently, if at all, are you like practicing those techniques in training? Like, are you doing visualization, goal setting, or is it more like you're putting these things into practice in races and sharpening those tools during the race? Or is this something that you are like, it's part of your training?
Yeah, I think it's definitely part of my training. Sometimes it's not always. So I guess if I'm going out for a really long training effort or almost like a race day prep effort, then I'll really try to make it as similar to race day and implement some of these strategies in low moments. But I also think for a majority of my day-to-day runs, I try to implement this, and it may not even be as a conscious effort or just something I'm trying to naturally do or that I find myself doing. So if I have a low moment, like I can think of one recently where I caught my foot on something and I went, like, we've all done it, that like Superman fall where you just are flying and looking down at the ground. And I wasn't injured. It hurt. It kind of stunk. I didn't feel great doing it. You feel kind of silly tripping over a root. But rather than getting down at myself or getting in my head or getting really frustrated, I sort of just try to laugh it off as best I can. So I just, as long as I'm, again, not injured, stand up, shake my head, figure out what it was that tripped me, and sort of just laugh at it and find these silly moments, because we're all going to fall or we're all going to have these low moments. But if we can come out of it and just think, this is ridiculous, this is so silly, like, I'm out here running in the woods by myself and I just went flying and fell, but I'm okay. And that was really funny. So let's just keep going. What else am I going to do? And I do also try to, not on all of my runs, but some of my longer efforts, or I just did an FKT recently and I just held a group run recently. I do try to still wear glitter as much as possible because it just makes me happy. So things like that just help me day to day. They don't have to be reserved for race day only.
I love that. You know, one thing I like from the race director of U-Ray, I know it's not a 200, but he makes an observation in his race manual that the most successful racers are those out there where all of their crews, the expectations are flexible, right? Is like the moment that a pacer has it in their head that they're only going to pace for 4 hours, that, you know, you're chasing these, whatever goals they may be, when it starts to unravel, that's when everyone gets negative. That's when things start to go sideways. So I think just having surrounding yourself with positive people, you being positive, I love that as a way to navigate these races successfully. So maybe shifting gears a little bit, can you talk to us about what the Women in Ultra Running group is and what its goals are?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Women in Ultra Running, it started as an event series, but I think I've really quickly seen that it has become a group or a community. So this is something I started in January, and its inception was to create an event series to help welcome more women into the sport of ultra running. So I believe the statistic has increased for 2023, but at the time I was looking at the stats, this was from 2022, and about 23% of ultra runners in 2022 identified as female. I believe now for 2023, we're up to 31%. So that is amazing and a huge growth. But I looked at that number and was like, that's still really low. I would love to see that being, you know, approaching 50-50, even surpassing 50-50. But I was really struck by the fact that that number was still quite low, despite the fact that women can have incredible success in the ultra world. It's one of the few areas of running, or even potentially of sport, where we see women winning races all out. So there's definitely something there, and there's definitely a power that women have and something they really bring to the sport. But still, I saw the numbers being so low. So trying to think through why that could be happening or what was going on there. And this, some of these are just my own musings or thoughts, but just thinking about traditional kind of like gender roles or gender stereotypes. So I think far more often my female counterparts will get questions like, how are you able to train this much? Like, who would be watching your kids, or who's going to be, you know, at home? I think some of those stereotypes still are ingrained in our society. So having those being questioned more for how you're able to make the time versus some of, my male counterparts in the sport, thinking about the ways that races are often like advertised or portrayed, kind of going back to, you know, what's the toughest race out there? What's the hardest thing you can do? That kind of Goggins mentality, I think, still exists in a lot of ultra races because they are really hard and tough, but they don't always need to be marketed as such, because I think that can really, and it's for myself as well, like it was a deterrent. I didn't know if I wanted to do the toughest, hardest thing. That wasn't what motivated me to run ultras. And then I think kind of with that, you also then start to see if all of those things are happening, then you're going to start to see fewer and fewer women at start lines. So if you're considering a race and you look at a photo of the start line and you see one or two women, you're not going to be as motivated to get out there yourself, because you're not going to feel as comfortable. You're not seeing as many people who look like you within the sport. So with all of that, I was trying to figure out what could be a way to help bring more women to the sport. What could be a way to make it feel more accessible, make it feel like a space where they're welcome. So I designed this series called Women in Ultra Running. Initially started as a 4-part series, with each event having a different topic focus. So we started with introduction to ultras. Then we did an event on mental strategy. We did an event on hills and technical trails. We've done a night run. And then coming up, it's expanded far past a 4-part series, but coming up we'll have a nutrition event and then a injury prevention and strength training event. And all of the events, they are, I don't always love to be exclusionary, but I think that this is a space where that is needed to help people feel comfortable. So for folks who identify as female, we come, meet together, we go for a trail run, and then we have a topic discussion afterwards, or we have little clinics kind of embedded through the run where we can practice different skills, learn different things, and then kind of go from there. And since the first few events have been going really well, we've kind of created our own community space, and we're just going to continue to grow from there. And I think it's had a positive impact so far. I've been getting good feedback on it. So just also trying to consider where this could go from here. But I think it's creating a safe space where women can learn from each other and be welcomed into a sport where I do think we have such strength and such power. But for whatever reason, and I think a few of them that I identified earlier, we're just not seeing the numbers, or I wasn't seeing the numbers in a space where I really wanted to see them. So I was hopeful that this would help kind of bolster that.
Yeah, if our podcast analytics are to be believed, our listenership is about 70-30 male female. So, which is, it's just interesting that that's exactly the kind of the number that you, identified as well. And, you know, following you on social media for a while now and seeing these events, which have appeared to be such a huge success, you know, if you're only using the metric of who's showing up, they seem to be, you know, quite large, which for a regional event to get people to come out and show up, like if anyone who's ever tried to do that, it's really hard to do. Like, it's hard to get a large group of people to come together, for anything. So that is really cool. And I just love what you're doing with that. And this is kind of a big question. But like, and you know, maybe think of it more on a macro level than a micro level. So like, you know, what can the ultra running community do to encourage more women to participate in the sport? Like, what steps would you like to see taken in the next, you know, months, years?
Yeah, absolutely. I think first off, just considering, and some of these I think are easier than others, but considering how your race is marketed. So is it appealing to a large audience, or is it appealing to maybe a smaller audience of folks who are interested in ultras because maybe they are the quote unquote like toughest thing they could do? So it can still be tough, but, and you can still advertise it as such, but maybe advertise some other parts of it. Maybe advertise the really great aid station setups that you have, or the food. Some people, I like that part of ultras. That is hugely motivating for me, not just because I can say I did, you know, the hardest race out there. And with that, kind of considering what your race marketing looks like. So it could be as simple as just open up the race's Instagram page and see, oh, wow, every last five posts have been of men finishing this race. Or the last five posts, people have just an upset face on. Like, it could be something like that. And considering what that says to people considering to run your race. So if that's something I would see, I would not be inclined to sign up for that. And then I think like a larger step could be something like for races that have lotteries, reserving select lottery entries for folks who identify as female or who identify as non-binary. Because while a lottery is technically on paper, potentially the fairest way to allow people entry into a race, is it making it the most equitable? Is it making it the most well-rounded field that you could have? Potentially not, because say 70% of the people registered in the lottery are men and 30% are women, you're still going to have a race that looks like that likely if that's how the lottery is being drawn. So setting aside a certain number of lottery entries for, and this could even be expanded upon, but for just communities less represented in the sport, I think is a huge step because it really guarantees that you have a very well-rounded field. And that doesn't have to be something that's necessarily in place forever, because the hope is by doing these things, by changing the marketing, by changing who's seen in the sport, by changing the people on your start line to be more diverse, the hope is that then people see themselves there, they start to register more and more, and we don't maybe have to have these lottery entries set aside. But I think it would be an incredible step to see, because it would really guarantee that you're getting a well-rounded, diverse group of folks to the start line. So first two, I think, are on paper a little bit easier to achieve, maybe wouldn't ruffle feathers as much as the last one. But I really do think that it's a step that would really help create a more diverse space and welcome more people into the sport, because it's an area that I love so much and I've gotten so much out of it. And I have so many wonderful things to say for all my male counterparts that I've encountered out on the trails, but I would just love to see it continue to grow and continue to be more diverse and for more people to feel like they're welcomed into this area. That's really special.
I applaud everything that you're doing, you know, to encourage equity in the sport. And I love the comments on how to market races. I think there's so much to these races beyond, you know, just the grittiness and how difficult they are. And yeah, everything you were saying about how, you know, just like, how is it for the crew? What's their experience? You know, that could be a draw for a race, you know, vegan options and the food. You know, there's so many different dimensions to it, you know, that make people get joy out of these races. So I love that. So switching gears again, you know, we've had the race director on for the Divide 200, and that's, you know, the next race for you. So what drew you to, you know, out of all the possible 200s, what drew you to Divide 200 as your next goal?
Yeah. And I listened to that episode. It was awesome. I was doing an FKT attempt and that was like one of the first ones that I put on. So super excited. So thank you all for doing that. Yeah, I am a huge sucker for a really incredible race video. It's what, as I said before, got me super hooked on Coca Dona. And I, someone that I'd met at Coca Dona, Andrew Marvin, he went and crewed and paced that race last year. So since meeting him at Coca Dona, I'd been following him on social media and I saw that he was crewing this race and I kind of talked to him about it. It's like, oh, I haven't heard this one. I know last year was the first year it was run and he had just really great things to say about it. So then knowing that in the back of my mind, and then Divide came out with their kind of their race video end of last year, I believe. And the views were just otherworldly. I know that's not everything. That's a huge draw to me for these races as well. Is I like to go on an adventure. I like to see something that I've never seen before. I like to get myself in a place where why else would I ever be here at this moment in time besides taking on this adventure, doing this race? And yeah, so that video fully got me. So I registered for the initial lottery and I know it's since changed to being kind of more open registration, but I was pulled in the initial lottery draw. And then as I was looking through the list and kind of considering if this was something I wanted to register for or not, I checked the list of people pulled in that first lottery draw and was noticing, I was like, there are a lot of women on this list. And so I did some quick math and calculations and that first lottery pull was at almost exactly 50-50 kind of gender split. And at that moment, I like looked at my husband. I was like, well, like I have to do this now. There's something about this race, obviously, that's pulling more women to participate in it. And it's, I think, just the community that's building and it's a huge kudos to the race directors and the people putting this event on that it is drawing more female participation. And just knowing things that I've been working on, it felt sort of like fate. So then I pulled the trigger, I signed up, and Flatlander, Pennsylvanian me is going to go take on an alpine adventure. So it'll be quite the experience.
Yeah, it'll be fun to follow. And from what I've heard of people who've done both, that if you were okay at Coca Dona, you'll be just fine at the Divide. Not that it's any easier or anything, but you know, you've certainly proved yourself in the mountains already. What do you have anything like intentional that you're planning to do differently in your buildup for Divide during the race, you know, versus what you did at Coca Dona? Or any like major takeaways where you're like kind of pivoting 180 degrees or yeah.
Yeah. A few things that are going to be different. I know I need to go practice in more sort of alpine environments. It's not much I've ever really done or seen outside of like more hiking, not something I'm super familiar running on. So I have some trips planned. I am going to go crew and pace my friend at Tahoe this year. And then I also have a trip planned to Colorado to visit some friends and do some really just dedicated training to help feel more prepared for those sorts of environments, because I can do different hill repeats or quote unquote Pennsylvania mountain repeats as much as I can. And I can maybe get the elevation, but it's not going to quite feel the same as running out there. So that's definitely something intentional that I'm doing just to make sure I feel prepared for the environment. And I also think, however, I'm not sure what this will look like yet, but I think I need to figure out a better sleep strategy or sleep plan. I think no one's going to feel perfectly refreshed by the end of a 200 miler, but I would love to feel a little less completely crazy than I did towards like day 3 or 4 of Coca Dona. So anyway, I can figure that out. And despite being a coach myself, I am still coached by a coach I've been working with, Scott Treyer, for the last 3 years. So he's excellent. And just really, I had some questions of, well, if you're a coach now, like, why do you still have a coach? And for as long as I can, I will continue to work with them because I love having that reassurance or that person kind of on my team to help encourage me to that next step. So I'm sure we'll also have a lot of other things to focus on as it gets a little closer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a coach myself too. And I've been working with a coach, you know, pretty much for the entire last 6 or 7 years. And that's you teed me up for a great segue because I want to get into your coaching a little bit. So I actually work at Training Peaks. That's my full-time job. I manage our coach match program. So I actually kind of operate as like a head coach overseeing, several hundred coaches, and we help them fill up their rosters. So when I was doing my normal kind of pre-episode research and Googling you, I saw that you are on Training Peaks. You have a coach profile on Training Peaks, and you're a USCA certified coach. So how, when did you decide you wanted to get into coaching? What did that journey look like for you? How is it going now? And for a shameless plug, why Training Peaks?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always been something, not always, but for the last few years, it's been something that I was interested in trying, because I feel like I am as good as one can be at building a community. I feel like I bring a sort of different take to the sport that I think could lend itself well to coaching, that it just, I feel like I can be a bit more approachable or relatable. I'm not an elite runner. But I think I can take on some tough challenges. So I felt like that I would have loved, I would love to find a coach like that too. Again, love Scott, and I will continue to work with him. He's an amazing runner, an elite who's able to really help folks across the board. But I wanted to be someone who maybe wasn't that, who was still a great coach. And I've worked as an occupational therapist full time I'd worked for about 8 years doing that, but didn't really know how coaching would fit into that world. And it just so happened that at the end of last year, kind of went through a job change situation, for lack of better words, and the opportunity sort of presented itself. I was in between jobs. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do next. And this goal or something I'd really wanted to try was just still out there, and it felt like the perfect time to give it my best shot. So haven't been coaching for a terribly long period of time yet. I started in December of this past year, so about almost 4 months now, and been working on building up my roster of athletes, a lot local, but some across the country, which has been really neat. I have some folks training for Eldon Crest 38 and Sedona 125, which has been really cool. They just sort of found me on accident, not knowing that I'd run Cocodona. So that was a really unique moment that we both figured out. And I really try to help athletes kind of just like, I think, figure out their why or what's going to be motivating them for these races. And then while also just trying to impart the knowledge that I've gained over the years in how to approach training, how to approach race day, how to structure what your race is going to look like from start to finish. And I think one of the big areas we focus on is once we get to our endurance block of training, really thinking of almost every long run as a dress rehearsal for race day, because that I can't understate how important that is to practice with a full pack, to dial in your nutrition. I think folks think, well, today's just a 2-hour run, but that 2-hour run should feel like, let's say, the start line to Cocodona every time you're doing it. Then you just know you're going to be most prepared going into it. Yeah, so I think it's been going well. Hopefully my athletes would agree with me. It's been a really fun journey and something that I'm hoping to continue to do and continue to help others achieve these goals. And I know I've kind of said before, but I think the more people that can experience an ultra, and particularly these like 200 plus mile distances, just like the better, sounds corny, but the better world we're going to have. But you learn so much more about yourself. You become truly just like a better person, I think a better community member. So if I can help others find what I've been able to find out there, that's all I could ever hope to do. And yeah, I love Training Peaks. I'm just familiar with the platform because it's what my coach does. So that's what inspired me there. I think it's been perfect. I love being able to have that back and forth communication within the app. I love being able to push workouts directly to someone's watch. So all the intervals kind of bing at every certain time that they're supposed to. So, and awesome customer service. Anytime I have like any issue or anything come up, it's super fast in my ability to get in touch with someone, which is huge. Cause as a new coach, there's some things that I'm troubleshooting. I bet I'm missing where this button is. It's probably silly, but can someone help me find this? How do I look at this way? And someone's always been quick to help me out and answer that question.
So at this point, do you have any 200 plus mile athletes on your roster?
Not yet. Longest that I have on my roster right now is someone training for Sedona Canyons 125. But who knows, hopefully soon.
All right. Well, that's a plug for any of our listeners looking for a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me know. I'm still taking athletes.
Yeah, I think as we wrap up here, there's one last section we love to do. It's our rapid fire. So we have five questions we'll ask. Just whatever pops into your head, you know, it doesn't have to be the perfect answer. Just curious to know what comes up first. So first question is, what was your highest high during Cocodona?
The ascent to the top of Eldon. So at the very end of the race, I was so nervous about it because I knew it's the highest point. It was hard, but I got to that space where, you know, the race is, I knew I was getting to the finish line. I knew that I could have crawled there. I had the time. So I kept thinking to myself again, like I said before, when else would I be here? For me, it was the middle of the night. So whipping winds, freezing cold, middle of the night, when else would I be doing that kind of climb? And then getting to the top, I just sat down and I looked out at, you know, everything below me and just started laughing because it was such a special moment that you would never have experienced any other way or any other time.
It's such a fun, like, if that happens in every race where it's like, you know, you're going to finish. And that's such a crucial, like, fun moment where you're like, it's just the weight is all off your shoulders. Okay. So flip side of that question is lowest low during Cocodona last year.
That Mingus descent. I can't, I'm posting in the Facebook group all over the place when people are looking for advice, like, do not underestimate how rude this descent is. It was cathartic, but I had a full on just like sobbing moment. But like we said before, it led me to one of my higher moments in the race. So as much as I really hate that descent, it did truly teach me a lot.
All right. Favorite food in a 200?
Uncrustables. And if Smuckers is listening, I will say it forever. Sponsor me. Sponsor Ultra Runners. It is the perfect ultra food. A little wrapped up PB&J in a container. Can't talk about it enough.
The peanut butter and Nutella ones are really good too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Favorite piece of gear for a 200? If you had, you know, if everything was generic and you had to pick one piece of gear that you got to pick out.
Either some really fun patterned Zensa socks. I love the way they fit. And I love, again, the fun patterns. Or a ridiculous bucket hat.
Nice. And then the last question, you know, I think we all know the answer, but it's the theme of this podcast, so we have to ask it anyway. Have you found your distance to empty yet?
Yeah, definitely not. It's still out there, and honestly, it'd be great. Maybe, hopefully I never find it, because that's the fun and the adventure of it.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. That was a super fun chat. Where can listeners find you? Where can they learn more about your coaching? Where can they learn more about the Women in Ultra Running group if they happen to be in the area? Let us know.
Yeah, easiest way to find me is probably on Instagram. So it's Rachel, RACHEL _ Lynn, LYNN 07. And then links to everything we just talked about, links to get in touch with me for coaching, to be a part of the Women in Ultra Running group or event series is all in like the link tree in there. And I will say too, these in-person events for Women in Ultra Running are local to Philadelphia, because that's where I live, but we have an online community through a platform called Halo that anyone can join from around the country, around the world even. We have different chat forums where folks can discuss different topics and connect with one another. So I encourage folks, even if you're not local, to join us on Halo and be part of the community.
Awesome. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you. Appreciate it so much.
Well, that was a great chat with Rachel. I really love her take on you know, strength in these distances, where, you know, it's not always about being really gritty and suffering. You know, it's, you know, a lot of it can just come from positivity and having, you know, positive self-talk to get you through these things. So I definitely like that philosophy. That's how I approach these races myself, or at least try to. So yeah, just love how she framed all that.
Yeah. Same. I try to approach them that way. Certainly relate much more to that than I do that Goggins style, as I mentioned, but sometimes it is really hard when you're just really, really at a low moment to kind of find that joy and find that you know, to be kind to yourself, but definitely always striving to lean towards that versus the, you know, just calling yourself bad names and wallowing.
Agreed. So to kick us off, performance of the week.
Let's do it. And by let's do it, I mean you do it.
Cool. So this is a fun one. For the first time, we've had a listener give a suggestion for a performance of the week, and this one is well-deserved. So Lance Harp called out Brandon Lott, who did this 1,000-mile Iditarod trail invitation also. That's 5 200s. I can't even fathom that. And it sounds like a 30-day cutoff. It sounds like Brandon had a few challenges out there, so really had to put in a tough performance to get this done and barely skated by with 2 hours to spare. And I think there's a 30-day cutoff to this thing. So big kudos to Brandon for this Iditarod Trail Invitational.
Yeah, wow. Nice job, Brandon. That's pretty crazy coming down to the wire there with a 30-day project. That must have felt really cool to, you know, see the finish line. All right, should we get to let's do a snack review. We got new snacks and they're pretty good. I feel like we got a better batch this time around.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so we ordered a mystery bag from Galactic Snacks. No sponsorship or any, you know, affiliation with Galactic Snacks. We just wanted to try some weird snacks from all over the world and see how they would fare for ultra running snacks. So what do we have today, Peter?
So today we have Choco Churros from Korea. They're these little four-layer nuggets of churro goodness that comes in a bag, kind of like chips, and they're really good.
Yeah, they're really good. They won't last long here. They're like, they taste kind of like a chocolatey churro, and it's like they almost like kind of dissolve as you crunch them.
Yeah, these would work well in a race.
Just 10 out of 10.
Yeah, they go down really, really easy, and they're great with coffee. I happen to be drinking coffee.
Nice. You're always drinking coffee.
That's true.
It's not even early.
I know.
So if you can get your hands on some Korean Choco Churros, they come highly recommended from us two dummies. All right. Let's do a course corner. I'll kick it off to you and I'll weigh in a bit as well. We're going to keep it on Cocodona just because that's kind of the next 200 coming up here in, you know, 5 weeks or so. We'll try to be more focused on the other 200s as they are rapidly approaching as well. So I want to talk about one of the earlier sections that I think gets overlooked pretty often. So after you get to Crown King at Cocodona, it's a 16-mile stretch. So it's, you know, it's a long stretch till the aid station after Crown King at Arasta Creek. So what do you remember, Peter, from Crown King to Arasta Creek?
So that section's interesting. So first of all, you know, getting to Crown King alone is an accomplishment. And it's hard to mentally like wrap your head around leaving again, knowing it so far. So I think that's something to be mentally prepared for. Is just knowing that you got to keep going and prepare yourself for that. But at least for me, I really loved this section. I caught the sun setting. It is climbing, but it's not technical at all. It was just fire road. So you can really just turn your brain off and just gut it out. The temperature will have gone down. So for this section, I had a positive experience and I came into Arasta Creek just fine. Was able to have a quick turnaround there.
Yeah, mostly the same for me. I definitely agree. Like it's so much less rugged than what you've already done. So it is like you can kind of just like put yourself on autopilot and, you know, whether you're hiking or running, you can kind of get through it with much less focus than the previous sections. There is a fair bit of climbing and descent. I think it's like 2,800, 2,900 of each. So it's, you know, it's rolling and there are some longer climbs in it, but it doesn't feel nearly as bad as what you had just done. And then the descent down into Arasta Creek is pretty chill. For most people, you'll be either already in the dark or moving into the night when you get there.
All right. So is it that time?
It's that time. Let's get deep. Peter, tell us what Let's Get Deep is. I feel like I always explain it. So do you know what it is?
I think so. It's a card game for couples. It's got three levels of intimacy. There's icebreaker, deep and deeper. And basically we take turns asking each other these questions just to see what silliness ensues. So I'll kick it off. So your icebreaker, if you had to permanently move to a new country, where would you go and why?
I think I'd go to New Zealand. I did a trip there and the trail running was just out of this world. The like culturally speaking, it was like not a culture shock. So it would be like a pretty smooth transition, and, you know, very lots of similar things over there. So yeah, New Zealand, it's really beautiful and easy to navigate.
Makes sense. I've never been there.
Put it on the list. All right, icebreaker for you. If you had to give up one meal a day, would it be breakfast, lunch, or dinner? Why?
I'm giving up lunch just because breakfast is my favorite. I'm a big fan of even breakfast for dinner. You know, pancakes, waffles, all that kind of stuff. So I could never give that up. And I also love dinner, like meats and barbecue. And yeah, lunch, I could just skip lunch.
Yeah, I'd probably skip lunch too. I don't want to, but if I had to.
All right. Deep for you. If you could choose one animal to be, which would you choose? Why?
Oh man, I've thought about this a lot. Probably, if it was for ultra running, I'd probably go with walrus because they've been recorded to be able to not sleep for like 80 hours. And they're not as slow as people think. So I think I could be pretty good at 200s if I was a walrus.
Did not expect that.
look it up. Walrus can stay awake for 80 plus hours. All right, you're deep. What is the best purchase you've ever made? Why?
Well, the most recent purchase that I'm now addicted to is this 3D printer I got. I've always wanted one. I just can't stop printing stuff. So I don't know if it's the best, but it's definitely a fun new hobby.
I feel like everyone I know who's gotten a 3D printer uses it for like a day or a week, and then it like collects dust, and you're actually using yours. So kudos.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm able to print fun things like this. So,
is that the course profile for you, Ray?
Yep.
Man, that's a crazy course profile.
All right. And then deeper for you. What is your most unpopular opinion?
Most unpopular opinion. I feel like I don't have that many unpopular opinions. But I'll keep it. Let's make it the 200 focus. And I think like I see people going out on like overnight runs and like sleep deprivation runs, and I think that is silly and counterproductive. I think sleep and is so much more valuable to recovery than like any gains you get from like training through sleep for these multi-day races.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think like definitely value in running at night, but don't put yourself in the heart locker overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, like there's exceptions and like there's, you know, reasons to do those type of runs sometimes. But I think generally speaking, like my recommendation is to not do that nonsense. Okay. I feel like I know the answer to this, so I'm curious to know if you say the same thing. You're deeper, and this shouldn't be a deeper because it's not that deeper of a question, but anyway, what slang have I picked up from you?
What slang? Why am I drawing a blank?
I'll answer for you. I feel like I never said OMG before I started hanging out with. Like that's. I don't know if it's from you directly or just kind of our group of running friends, but like that was not part of my vernacular beforehand.
I don't even know where that came from.
But now I say it all the time to everyone, not just to you and you know, like that group. It's just like, it's part of my like daily, like it's my response to everything.
Love it.
Yep. OMG.
OMG.
That's it, right?
I think so. Yep. We finished the game.
We finished the episode. Thanks for listening. If you guys liked it, please leave us a review. We would love to get more reviews out there. Helps us grow the podcast. Give us a follow or a subscribe on Spotify or Apple. And tune in next week. We got some really awesome guests on tap that we're recording in this upcoming week. And looking forward to share it with you all. Thanks.